Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your host. It's those Hurricane Alley boys. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you in this time of storms?
I feel fine-ish. I'm pretty far inland out here in the mountains. So, at worst, I think we're going to get a bit of rain. But I don't think we're going to have to, like, cancel anything. How about you? I know you've been into the hurricane preparedness this week.
Well, we will get into that in the checks portion of the show.
Oh, so you jumped the gun. You jumped the gun on me.
I'm just asking you how you are. You could have said fine, and we would have moved right on.
I thought we were doing some hurricane talk here up top. I hope for everybody listening to this right now, by the way, that you are all okay. This will be going up after the brunt of the hurricane, hopefully. So if you are in the area where you would have been most affected by it, I hope you're doing okay. If not, I hope things get okay real quick.
Very much so. It has been a weird week of watching this hurricane come to us, but we are here to do our show as we always do. Each and every week.
The show must go on.
The show must go on. If I wasn't here, you would just be ranking characters silently alone in your office.
That's right. I would be recording myself typing into a Google Doc. Like, the characters I like most.
Type. Yeah, I think that's a good place for like number 416. Yeah, that's good. But no, we're here. We're talking to each other. We're going to do a show. We are going to do a show. Because it's Thursday night for us and Monday afternoon for you, and that is what we do. That's right, everyone. It is a panel president special this week. No guests, just me and Matt ranking our characters. Not our characters. You know what the show is. You've heard it before. Look, I'm tired.
Before we get to that, Chris, and clearly it's going to go very well once we get there.
I think so. I think it's going to be smooth as silk.
We do have some business to take care of, starting by talking a little bit about Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the people who, in olden times, in days gone by, in days of yore, in times past, in other Starman story titles, they would have to go to the ATM, put in the PIN number. They would have to take the money, put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, and write 419 Gimmick Street. That's right, 419 Gimmick Street. And send it off in the mail to us. But now, they can support the show just by going to patreon.com/warrocketajax, where they can kick in as little as a dollar each and every week to help us pay the bills and keep those gimmicks. No, that's not what I say.
That's not what you say.
I'm trying to remember what I say and what I've said for like 2 years.
You say, keep the lights on and pay
keep
those gimmicks.
Keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. Thank you, Matt.
Got it. So we have some new patrons, but we were asked specifically to keep them anonymous this time. So instead of thanking them, even though we do thank them anonymously, we are just going to ask you, if you would like to help us out on Patreon, to head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, kick in, as Chris said, at least $1 a month. If you do that, you get ad-free episodes of everything that we do, except for bonus audio, which people at the $5 level get. You might also get line-stepping privileges for our ranking segments, like Panel President, which we're going to be doing this episode, and physical rewards even higher than that. So if any of that sounds very cool to you, head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help us out if you can do so. With that, Chris, it's time for some checks and recs. So let's do that.
Let's do it.
Chris, we gave a little preview, I think, of what you have to check in with. So let's expand on that preview.
I think what we should do from now on is do previews of each segment of the show at the top of the show to keep people coming back. You don't want them turning over to Nitro, Matt.
But if you give them the preview, then you've given away everything.
You gotta put butts in seats. Yes, it has been a week of preparing for a hurricane for me. Because on Monday, we woke up and Al Roker said, "Hey, everybody, there is a hurricane coming. It is going to be historically powerful. It is the most powerful hurricane to hit the Carolinas in 140 years. It is going to make landfall as a Category 4, and then the pressure systems around it are going to keep it parked over the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area, the triangle. The storm was supposed to come inland and just sit here for 4 days where I live." So I went to Target, which was a 2.5 hour odyssey, and I loaded up. I got some canned goods. I got bottled water. I got a phone charger. I dropped a not insignificant amount of hurricane preparation money. I got the last two non-scented candles at Target, which I was pretty excited about finding. And so I felt prepared. I was like texting a friend of mine who is far more practical than I am, who was like, "Hey, I don't mean to mother hen you." And I was like, "No, please. Please, I am in dire need of guidance in these times." And she was helping me out. So I felt pretty good about my preparation level. I bought a first aid kit at Target that looks like that if video game things start happening, it's my fault because I got the most cartoonish first aid kit I could and put it like propped it up in the linen closet. So I felt prepared. So then Tuesday I got up and the friendly face of Al Roker was like, "Hey, everybody, here's an interesting thing. This hurricane's going to take like a sharp left turn and not go just directly towards Chris's house." The models continued to change. And I'm not like blaming meteorology on this. I know that it's an interesting science of projections and that small things can make big changes.
Certainly you're not blaming famous internet cooking show host Al Roker.
Oh no, I love Al Roker. You know that. Favorite part of the Today Show. It's Al, then it's Hoda, then Savannah, then probably Louis Licari, and then Kathy Lee, and then way down at the bottom is Carson. You know I've had beef with Carson for about 18 years.
Is that Carson Daly?
It's Carson Daly, son.
I didn't know he was on the Today Show.
His name is Carson Today now.
Oh, boy. You should, by the way, check out the Hot Ones episode with Al Roker. It is a delight.
How does he do?
Oh, he nails it.
I bet he does.
Nails it, my man.
Unsurprising. Yeah. Al Roker, by the way, a man who looks good in a suit and a hat. Like a classic style, like 1940s, put your hat on when you go outside kind of look. Al Roker pulls it off.
He's a stylish fella.
He is a stylish fella, surprisingly so. I think, how would Al Roker do on the panel president list? What are his comics appearances?
We don't rank real people.
That's true. We don't rank real people. As the week continued to go on, I had this weird, like, kind of high-level anxiety because I'm bracing for this storm that has made, you know, getting work done difficult because I'm, you know, at Target for 2.5 hours, or I'm checking the NOAA reports in the Hurricane Center, looking at where the floodplains are in the triangle. And then everything, like it was supposed to get here. They were like, Wednesday night, it's on. And it is now Thursday night, and it's kind of drizzling outside. And look, I am not saying that I am eager for the destructive force of nature to come, and I am not minimizing the stuff that we've already seen from out on the coast. There was a picture that Aiden showed me of New Bern that the storm surge has just swamped the entire town, and so do not, under any circumstances, think of that. But it is weird to be in this waiting for the skies to open up phase, because from what we can tell, it's going to kind of curve around and just sort of circle where I am, and we're just going to be on the fringes of it for a week. So I'm sure we're going to get a ton of rain. But again, it is no longer looking like it is the sizable or forceful kind of storm that it was. I think it's currently a Category 2 as of this recording. That might have all changed by Monday. But it's weird to be in the anxious part of waiting for weather to happen. So hopefully everyone out there is staying dry, and I hope you don't think I'm just being frustrated because it hasn't started raining yet. I hope everyone out there is safe and is taking care of themselves. And if nothing else, I am glad that I went out and picked up a bunch of stuff that I should probably have on hand anyway while with living in North Carolina.
Yeah, that stuff is all worth having in case of an emergency, even if the current emergency turns out not to be as bad as you might think.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have flashlights and we had just bought batteries, so we were all good on that front. But the phone charger was a thing that I didn't have, and we actually had some bottled water from when the ice storm happened, but I got a little more and I filled up some jugs. So I'm doing okay, but it has been a week of preparation and waiting. Matt, what is your check this week?
My check is something that will happen unless the storm prevents it. So we'll see what the next 24 to 48 hours holds. But this coming weekend, as we're recording this, this past weekend, as you're hearing this, the tapings, the two nights of tapings for my wife Marlene's show, From the Ashes, which she and I mostly wrote together, which she has filmed a number of sketches and on the street interviews and other segments on film for, and which is, I think, going to be really funny and great. They're supposed to be happening Friday and Saturday night. Unless we get like major flooding, it's going to be happening. And for people listening to this, the important thing for you, if you're not local to here, is that the videos from that are going to be going up online very soon. And I'm going to be sharing those like crazy. And I would love for you to share them like crazy also. I think they're going to be really good and really well done. And I'm excited about it. I'm going to be kind of like behind the scenes in sort of a producer role. I'm going to be running the images that come up as Marlene's talking in her desk segments. It's going to be one of those things where, like, you know, there's an accompanying picture for what she's talking about at that particular moment. So I'm going to be running that slideshow and sort of making sure things happen at the right times. I managed to find a teleprompter app for tablets that we're going to use as a teleprompter for this. We're trying to be as absolutely professional about this show as we can. We ran an Indiegogo for it, as I mentioned on the show a while back, and we met our goal. Thank you to everybody listening who contributed to that. It was a huge help. And it's been stressful and nerve-inducing, and we're not exactly sure how it's all going to turn out, but it's also super exciting to be doing this. So barring hurricane-related postponement, we will be doing that very soon, and we hope that you all will be able to see the video from it in the very near future. One other thing I should note before we move on to recommendations: next week's episode is War Rocket Ajax number 420. It is a special episode. We will not be doing these segments or any other segments that we normally do on a regular show. It is going to be an all-special, all-dank show that will be all one thing. So
blazing. It's going to be blazing.
Absolutely blazing. So keep your ears open for that. Also, the week after that, I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to LA for a week. So Chris is going to be getting a guest host for that episode, and it'll be going up after that. So I will be back for my next regular episode, I believe, in the first week of October. What that means is I don't know if we're going to get every story ever all knocked out by the end of September. It may be one of those early October, early the next month kind of deals this time. We will keep you posted and we will get it up as soon as we can. but I wanted to give a little fair warning to everybody because of scheduling. We're going to try our best to do every story editor in a timely way, but I'm also going to be spending the last week of the month across the country. So fair warning, sorry if we're a little late on that stuff. All right, Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
Matt, last week I recommended the video game Hollow Knight, which is in the Metroidvania genre. And this week I would like to recommend another retro-styled video game that I have been enjoying. It is called The Messenger. Matt, have you heard of this game?
I mean, it sounds like it's about one of my favorite historical figures, Joan of Arc.
I did like this game, and now I wish it was just about St. Joan. So thank you for ruining this game. No longer recommended. No, it is a game that is relatively new. It's out on the Switch and various platforms. And I think you would enjoy it, Matt, specifically.
Okay.
How do you feel about Ninja Gaiden?
It was one of my favorites as a kid. I have a tough time with it in later years, like when I've tried to play it again later because of its extreme difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a game I enjoyed a lot in my youth.
Well, I think you should play The Messenger, Matt, because it is very much a game that is heavily inspired by Ninja Gaiden, or Gaiden, I guess, is probably how that is properly pronounced. Not the way I pronounced it when I was a child renting that game from Sycamore Video in Sumter, South Carolina.
1987 kids in North Carolina and South Carolina were saying Ninja Gaiden.
Yep, Ninja Gaiden, and I love Ryu from Street Fighter, and other things that I said wrong, I'm sure. Now, here is where we need to make a decision, Matt.
Okay.
There's things about this game that I want to talk about. They would be considered spoilers for an interesting experience that I was kind of spoiled on going in. And if you think you might play this game, I will just say it's very good. It's extremely difficult. I had to go look up like videos to try and figure out how to beat some of these bosses. I was literally looking up to see if there were cheat codes. And you can get like stuff on Steam to add to it, but not on Switch. So I was just stuck on this boss for like a day. There is an interesting experience that I can spoil. Now, I will leave it up to you if you want me to do that.
I'll give you you can use your judgment on how much you want to say. I'm not too worried about getting spoiled.
Okay.
But we should at least let listeners know that if you want to go into this game totally unspoiled, we are getting into spoiler territory and you may want to skip ahead.
Yeah, skip ahead about a minute or two. Okay, Matt, I think you'll appreciate this from a structural level. There are two twists. The first twist is that you're going through this very Ninja Gaiden-esque game, and then you go through the Tower of Time, and then it takes you 500 years into the future, and it turns from an 8-bit retro game to a 16-bit retro game.
Does it become a Strider thing at that point?
It stays kind of a Ninja Gaiden at that point. But
well,
it is
Strider as the 16-bit Ninja Gaiden, kind of.
There are Strider elements. Basically, you get a hat is the big, the big thing that changes. That's the first big twist. The second big twist is that after you go through all the levels, it is then revealed that the distinct Ninja Gaiden-esque levels that you've been going through form one contiguous Metroidvania-style map that you then need to go and re-explore by moving back and forth between the two time periods, which you can do like by going to the hub area, or there are like rifts in time in each level that some of them are one way and some of them you can kind of manipulate who you are. And then there are also like enemies or elements of the game that will, like, certain platforms only exist in one time. So you need to create those platforms by like using this enemy that has this field around it that changes the time area. And it like kind of also effortlessly replaces your sprite with, you know, even if you were standing half in and half out of the different time period. It's a really, really cool gimmick. The game is hard in a very frustrating Nintendo-like extreme. But I really, really love the twist of it starting as Ninja Gaiden, then doing a weird time shift, and then coming back around to, actually, it's Metroid.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That does sound like a fun gimmick, and it seems like it makes it worth playing to get, like, that replay within a different context. I mean, that all does sound very cool, and, you know, it would have been maybe nice to get as a surprise, but I don't know if I would have been as into playing the game if I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's one thing that, like, if you haven't been spoiled on it, don't, you know? But I went in knowing that it was building to a thing, which if I honestly, I didn't know, I would have maybe gotten so frustrated at how difficult parts of that game were that I would have quit if I didn't know that you were basically getting a second game at the end. Yeah. But it's really super interesting layout of levels, really super interesting way to accomplish that. Also, like, really cleverly written. Like, there's dialogue with the shopkeepers that's one of the elements is you can ask a shopkeeper to tell you a story, and so you get all these weird little fables that you then discuss. It's really interesting and fun. But yeah, the messenger is quite good. And available on the Nintendo Switch. Matt, what's your rec this week?
My rec is Marvel's Spider-Man, which I went over to Orbit DVD, my local DVD rental and comic and video game store. Independently owned, support local business. And I picked that up on the day it came out on Friday. Somehow they had it for $55 instead of $60, so shout out to them. I was very pleased with that. I have been playing a lot of this game since I picked it up. I'd say I'm maybe halfway through the story. And I'll just go ahead and say that for a good part of the first chunk of the game, you're dealing with some organized crime villains. The game starts with basically Spider-Man has done enough work leading up to the beginning of the game that he's ready to essentially take down Kingpin. So the first part of the game is Spider-Man versus Kingpin. And then that creates sort of a vacuum in New York City for a crime boss. And what I would say is maybe an underused character since he debuted some 10 years ago now, Mr. Negative shows up after that. And I feel like the game does a really good job of adapting the Mr. Negative story for what I'm going to say is a very weird version of Spider-Man. A version of Spider-Man who has been Spider-Man for 8 years. So he started when he was 15, now he's 23. Who has fought Vulture, Rhino, Scorpion, Shocker, every member of the Sinister Six except Dr. Octopus, who, by all indications in the game, is not around yet. Likewise, Norman Osborn is in the game, but it would seem apparent that Peter does not know that he's the Green Goblin, or has any awareness that the Green Goblin exists. I'm not far along enough in the game to know if and when the Green Goblin shows up. It's a very strange thing that I've rationalized in my head as being, this is current movie Spider-Man 7 years later. So this is a version of Spider-Man who couldn't fight Doc Ock and Green Goblin first because they were in other movies that weren't part of this series.
Now, is Sandman there wearing his clothes from The Gap, is my question.
Sandman has not appeared yet.
Okay.
There has been one surprise villain who I was very pleased with, who I don't want to give away, but who was very good. I talked to our pal Benito Serino about that character showing up, and that was very cool. It's like a little side story in the game. Like many other open world games, there's a lot of collecting stuff going on in this game. There's a lot of like challenges. It's very much built on the Batman Arkham City mold, down to combat. And when I first started playing, I would have said that combat was my least favorite thing about the game. As I have progressed and leveled up Spider-Man and gotten more abilities for him, the combat has gotten more and more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I would say my favorite thing about the game, absolutely and completely, is traversing the city web swinging. It feels so great. You get a little bit of a rush from doing it. And it's especially fun when you're swinging around, like trying to do stuff in midair. Like you can get to a point where you do tricks in midair. You can pull out your camera and snap a picture in midair. And there are all these landmarks around the city that you're supposed to take pictures of. It's very fun. I'm probably going to stop talking about the game here unless you have any specific questions. I think we should probably do like some deep dive bonus content about Marvel's Spider-Man for PS4. But I have mostly loved it so far. It's easily my favorite game of the year, even though I don't know how many other new games I played this year, really. But I have really loved it. And I'm doing everything I can to prolong the story stuff and do more of the side missions and more of the like challenges and collection kind of deals while I kind of make the story stretch out as long as I can. I will say, Chris, there's one mission where you go to the campus of Empire State University on Halloween.
Oh.
And there's a Halloween party that you have to like run around in investigating stuff. It's very good.
Oh, that sounds quite fun. I will not be getting to this one for a while, like at least a month or two. I might hold out till Christmas because I'm sure that it's going to be on sale. And Matt, as you know, it's September 13th, so it's almost Christmas.
That's right. It's almost Halloween, which means it's almost
right, Christmas. Which means it's almost Christmas. Happy New Year, everybody. I did see a video of the combat that does seem very Arkham-y, in that I specifically saw a video of someone from Polygon explaining why Spider-Man isn't murdering people.
Yes.
When he does things like web them up and throws them in a lake.
I mean, that funny. You have to go out of your way to do that. The one that they really have to explain is when Spider-Man knocks somebody off a building.
Yes.
And the game explains that by having a little animation of him shooting out a web so they stick to the side of either that building or a different building and don't fall to their death.
Yeah, but you know what? That's good. I would rather have a game where it at least makes the effort. And I could be like, yeah, okay, cool.
I absolutely appreciate the effort.
Yeah.
We will have to do a – maybe when you get the game or just before you get the game, we'll have to do a deeper dive bonus content. Because one thing I haven't mentioned at all is the game's version of Mary Jane, who is a totally different version of Mary Jane from any comic or movie version of Mary Jane that I've ever seen. And she's actually great.
Really? Interesting. Yes.
Somebody on Twitter said they made Mary Jane Lois Lane, and they're absolutely right.
You know, they did that in one of the shows, too. One of the cartoons.
Huh.
Where she was the one who was trying to, like, interview Spider-Man for the Daily Bugle.
Yeah. Which show was that?
It was...
I can't remember.
I mean, there have been so many. It was Spectacular or...
Was it Spectacular Spider-Man?
I think it was Spectacular Spider-Man.
I watched some of that show on listener's recommendation, and I guess I forgot that detail. But she's absolutely a journalist for the Daily Bugle now, and I think the game's version of Mary Jane is really good. Like, they did a very good job with it. So we will talk more about that in a future bonus content, but it is absolutely and completely my recommendation for this week. All right, Chris, that's going to be our checks and recs. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
Let's do it.
So to start, I wanted to talk about a new Image Comics series written by Joe Casey with art by Ian McEwen. This book is called MCMLXXV, number one, which is the Roman numerals for 1975. And this book is a very interesting combination of things. To start with, it is like it's about a girl a young woman who has been destined to be a cab driver since her youth. She was trained by her grandfather to be a cab driver to study all the streets of New York City, learn them all, and become the best cab driver in town. So she's got that going for her. She's got what seems to be an enchanted tire iron that she uses to participate in fights with, which seems a little magey.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's certainly like a mage element to this. There's also a huge gang of ninjas that she fights within the first four pages of the book, which is kind of a daredevil element. And then she gets involved in a warrior's gang fight later in the issue as well. It is a real combination of things. At one point, also in the flashback with her grandfather, there are these like huge, like smoke-looking monsters that she has to encounter too. Like, this first issue rattles off a lot of different concepts and a lot of different ideas that seem to be synthesized from other things, but also kind of make this its own thing. But one thing that I was really struck by also is the art in this book, because it's supposed to be set in the 70s, but the way this book looks strikes me as very 1980s.
Okay.
The colorist on the book is named Brad Simpson, and the only way I can describe the coloring in this book is like a 1980s Frank Miller comic. I said this to a friend earlier today. It looks like this book came out in 1984. There's clearly like some Matt Wagner influence in here in the art as well, but the coloring gives it a real 80s comics vibe, which I appreciate a lot. I find this book really interesting, and I really want to keep up with it. So if nothing else, then for the main character fulfilling her cabbie destiny, that is pretty fantastic.
Yeah. You know what that sounds like?
What's that?
That sounds like a Joe Casey comic.
It sounds like a Joe Casey comic. You're not wrong about that.
Casey is one of those writers that I'm like weirdly super hot and cold on. Like I never know if I'm going to like something that he does. And generally, like for me, he's got better success with weird high concept indie stuff than he does with superheroes, which is usually the opposite of how I am with a lot of writers. But
I would agree. I mean, I feel like everything he does is really high concept, and either you buy the high concept or you don't.
Yeah. And like, I love stuff like Officer Down and Godland. I have not read Butcher Baker, The Righteous Maker, but I love the title.
And, I remember trying to read it. It was not exactly my thing.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say.
And Joe Casey got that Ben 10 money, so he can do whatever. I always respect when he's got a new comic out and it's just like, yeah, she's destined to be a cab driver. Gonna fight some ninjas.
Got an enchanted tire iron that glows.
That sounds super fun. The art on this book looks great, too.
Yeah, it's a really good looking book.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, we're going to move on to Squirrel Girl number 36.
That's right, Matt. This is Matt. If I asked you to name like five single issues of comics that you know I love.
I mean, I know one of them is Silent Interlude.
Hell yes, it is. G.I. Joe number 21, baby. And so you know I love a silent issue.
Sure.
And the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 36, which should be the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 21. If you're going to do a silent issue, do it at 21. That's handed down from Larry and Steve. But it's a silent issue. It is, of course, by Ryan North, Derek Charm. There's a couple of pages that show Squirrel Girl drawing mini comics. Those are by Madeline McGrain, colors by Rico Renzi. And then in a very, very fun little bit of the comic, Travis Lanham is credited as letterer, parentheses, so to speak, because it's a silent issue. The plot of this issue is that there is a giant librarian ghost who has silenced all of New York City, and Squirrel Girl has to figure out how to stop her. And it is a fantastic use of this high concept. It's a great little kind of reset issue coming after the Kraven story, which I think is one of the better, like, more serious Squirrel Girl stories that Ryan North has done in his tenure as a writer. If you didn't read the last issue, Matt, like, there's some really good stuff with Kraven and Spider-Man talking to each other, and Spider-Man being like, no, look, I don't know what he's done in your book, but he literally hunted me with a spear in Manhattan, which is very funny. I don't want to spoil it, but the solution that is come up with in this issue for the librarian ghost is brilliant and has the return of a character that I know we have a weird amount of misplaced affection for one panel, and it's great. So everybody should give that a read. A perfect single issue of Squirrel Girl.
One last comic that I had to mention before we wrap up this comic segment is Mech Cadet U number 12. This is the final issue of Greg Pak and Takeshi Miyazawa's what was originally announced as an ongoing series about kids at an academy, at a military academy, piloting these giant mech soldiers, fighting alien invaders with them. And the mechs aren't built by anybody. They just come down and choose a pilot. And so an unexpected youngster ends up becoming a pilot of the newest mech that arrives in issue number one. That's Mech Cadet U. And as is often the case with these types of stories, it's a story about, you know, big robot battles, but also the low status character earning the respect of the high status character. But what I love about this series is how nobody loses their rough edges. Like, by the end of this, the kind of mean pilot who was supposed to get the mech at the start of the series is still herself. She's still the same, thinking that she's got it together when nobody else does, kind of character. And Mech Cadet U is still, you know, very humble and not even sure if he should be there. But they have a grudging respect for each other, and they're able to, you know, coexist and be friendly by the end of the book. And this particular last issue has a great, huge final battle sequence. There are, you know, losses on the good guy side, and it reads really like, you know, those classic big battling mech kind of stories. It is a bit of a shame that it had to end at issue number 12. Again, this was announced as an ongoing. It seems a little bit like, you know, the creative team found out that this was the last issue somewhere late in the run. So it feels like they're wrapping up a lot of loose ends in one issue that maybe they thought they would have a little more time to wrap up. But for the most part, I think it's really well done. And I think this whole series is going to read very, very well once it's all collected and available. Takeshi Miyazawa is just a fantastic artist.
A treasure.
Should be doing books like this as long as they can do it. And Greg is also, all, you know, a fountain of ideas. So maybe there'll be a Mech Cadet U season 2 or something at some point. There's plenty left at the end of this issue to left open for that happening. But whatever the case, these 12 issues are really good, and you should check them out. That's going to do it for our comic segment, Chris, or at least current comics. Now it's time for us to rank some characters.
Let's do it, Matt.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
From the President's office in the White House.
President. Panel President.
You can hear the cheer coming. Now, what is the panel president list?
Panel President. We take some listener-submitted lists and place those characters on a huge, ever-expanding master list From best to worst, we elect the best characters and we impeach the worst characters. Panel President. As I just said from the past, this is Panel President. And we are going to get through as many lists as we can in this interview segment. Chris, would you like to refresh us on the current state of the Panel President list?
The current state of the Panel President list, Matt, is as follows. It has 380 entries spread out over 9 pages. At the top, we have Spider-Man, Batman, and Doctor Doom. A trinity that I cannot imagine going anywhere anytime soon. Down at the bottom of the list, we have bad characters that are not them, but they're very bad. I don't want to talk about them.
Chris, thank you for that State of the Panel President list address.
You are certainly welcome, Matt. God bless Mark and Ajax.
The assembled Congress do applaud and salute you. Okay. Here is a list from Dan Sylvester. The theme of this list is three D-listers that he loves, a top shooter, and a bottom shooter.
Oh boy, this should be fun.
Here are the three D-listers. We're starting with the Orb. That is the Jason Aaron character whose head is an actual eyeball.
Okay. The Orb was not created by Jason Aaron.
Right, yes.
If you are under the impression that the Orb was created during the Jason Aaron run on Ghost Rider, then by all means, go back and familiarize yourself. The Orb is from the 70s.
Yeah.
The Orb is Bronze Age, fool. The Orb's head's a giant eyeball.
First appeared in Marvel Team-Up number 15.
Yeah, he did. Now, I believe Jason Aaron did come up with the idea of the Orb's head actually being a giant eyeball and not a helmet shaped like a giant eyeball.
Yes, but it's the same character throughout.
Yes. Boy, the Orb is... I mean, the Orb's objectively bad. Like, by virtually any definition, Matt, he is terrible. But I do love him.
I mean, where does that go on the list? Now, if we're going to describe a little bit about what is up with the Orb is a mercenary.
Yeah, who rides a motorcycle.
That's right.
And his head's an eyeball.
That's right.
That's it.
We covered all the bases.
Where do we put guys like... I mean, I know exactly where we put him. Is Master Pandemonium, right? Like,
yeah.
He's virtually the same character down to being in the Jason Aaron Ghost Rider run as kind of a punchline. But, like, that's... It's one of those characters that, like, look, I don't want to read Master Pandemonium number one. I don't want that coming out. Unless it's, like, Chip. Chip's that I was curating and drawing Master Pandemonium number one. 500,000 copies, please. But, like, I love that he's there. I love that he exists.
Yeah. I mean, we can appreciate that the character exists, even if we're not, like, champing at the bit to get a solo book, you know? Yeah.
So I'm thinking that's where we're looking. Looking directly sort of under Master Pandemonium, if you don't remember Master Pandemonium, he's like an evil wizard with... He's like a demonic wizard and his arms are babies.
That's right.
And sometimes demons.
That's right.
Dream Girl, I think, is probably better than the Orb. Captain Cold, certainly. Mandrake the Dark Monitor, a.k.a. Dex Novu, is on this list. Right.
Love
down
him.
There.
Love him.
Matt, I'm going to say this, and I'm probably going to need you to stop me.
Okay.
I do like the Dream. I do like the Orb more than I like Dream of the Endless, the Sandman.
Look, I think he probably goes below Dream. He probably goes below Elijah Snow and Maria Hill.
Then we should probably put him below Adam X too, and Green Arrow too.
Okay, probably below D-Man also.
How does he compare to Lori Lamaris, Superman's mermaid girlfriend?
A more enjoyable high concept, I think.
Than Superman's mermaid girlfriend?
I mean, they're both very, like, rather enjoyable high concepts, I guess.
Yeah. He's definitely better than Signalman. Definitely
better than Signalman. Probably not as good as Monsieur Mala and the Brain. So maybe between them.
Yeah, number 296, the orb from the pages of Ghost Rider enters this list of characters.
Next up on the list from Dan is Jimmy Woo.
How dare you refer to Jimmy Woo as a D-lister?
Yeah, Jimmy's better than a D-lister.
He's an American hero. He's a patriot. He is a howling commando who became young again and leads a team of criminals who are actually a team of superheroes.
That's right.
And a criminal empire that is actually a criminal empire. Jimmy Woo's great, actually. Jimmy Woo's my favorite Howling Commando. And I am including Nick Fury in that. Like, Nick Fury's pretty good. Dum Dum Dugan fought Godzilla for 17 issues with a special helicarrier that was designed to fight Godzilla that still exists in the Marvel Universe. And I can name the others, but don't know anything about them. And Jimmy Woo is better than all of them.
I'll say this, though. You really have to wrestle with Jimmy Woo's problematic origins.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't the problematic character, but he was the Asian guy who was there to fight the Asian stereotype bad guy.
Yes, that's his pre-Howling Commandos history, is that he... But here's the thing. That becomes his Agents of Atlas history. Like, the Yellow Claw stuff comes back. Parker and... Who was the artist on that bill? Rick Leonardi?
Leonard Kirk.
Like they really do a good job of... When they're like, yeah, he's actually the Golden Claw. Like, that's all you gotta do.
There's been some recontextualizing of it to make it considerably less troubling.
Yeah.
I do think it takes some wrestling with, but it is hopeful that it has been addressed in some way to lessen the blow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jimmy was a good example of taking those things and not ignoring them, but trying to redeem them in a way that acknowledges the problematic history, but goes, we don't need to acknowledge that anymore. Like, if you need to look at the history of these characters, here's the new version. Here's the real history now.
Do you think
mm-hmm.
that Jimmy Woo is better than Detective Chimp, who is currently number 200 on the list?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Agent of Atlas is very good.
Okay, directly above Detective Chimp, we have Triplicate Girl, Harley Quinn, Starman, that's Ted Knight, Reggie Mantle, Linda Danvers, Supergirl, Fire and Ice, Power Girl, Kal-El, that's Superboy, and Michael Thomas, Starman.
Okay, well, here's where I want to stop you. Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we want to talk about a character that has difficult elements, although Harleys are significantly more recent.
Harleys aren't from her origin. They emerge later.
Yeah, Harleys are from 2011 to now.
Yeah.
2011 to present, unfortunately. But I think Harley is probably a better character than Jimmy Woo. But I mean, like, again, subjectively, I'm an Agents of Atlas guy. Like, I would put him, like, Nick Fury's at, like, number 62. I would put him above Nick Fury. But I understand that those who merely chip away the marble, we cannot necessarily do that.
All right, so let's put Jimmy Woo between Harley Quinn and Triplicate Girl.
Yeah.
At number 199.
Number 199, which makes Triplicate Girl the new 200.
Are you out of your mind? Next on the list is Six-Pack.
Six-Pack? From Section 8?
From Section 8.
Wow, that's one I was not expecting to get. That's weirdly very tough.
It's really tough because he's a joke character.
Uh-huh.
That hung around.
Yep.
He showed up in an issue of Hitman, like a pretty good chunk into the run. And then, weirdly, 20 years later, Section 8 got its own book.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's so fucking weird.
It's bizarre. Like, here's how I feel like that happened. I don't know this. This is pure conjecture on my part. Several years after Hitman was over, because Hitman ends in 2000.
Yeah.
2000, 2001, somewhere around there. It ends, I think, right before Punisher starts. So, 2000. And then several years later, they do the JLA Hitman series, which is so good. Just so, so good. Like, those three issues. Perfect Return to Hitman issues. And then I feel like somebody was like, hey, Garth, will you do another Hitman book? And Garth Ennis goes, Tommy's dead. I'll do one about Six-Pack.
And that Section 8 book is mostly about Six-Pack.
Yeah. And makes him a weirdly complicated character. Six-Pack's also problematic.
Six-Pack is hard to wrap your head around.
Yes, he is.
Because his whole deal is that he's drunk.
Mm-hmm.
His powers are based on him being an alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
He's all comic cliches.
Yeah, he only speaks in cliches.
It's really hard to wrap your head around the character.
I mean, it's the Garth Ennis joke thing, right? Of like, here's this, you know, guy who talks like superheroes and claims to be a superhero, but he's just this, you know, this drunk in the gutter.
Yeah.
And the gag of Hitman is that you never know if maybe Six-Pack really did fight Darkseid. You don't know. And then he introduces his team, which is also problematic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, Six-Pack is tough.
I mean, Dogwelder's still great.
Dogwelder's still great. Dogwelder,
the rest of them.
Dogwelder, still perfect. Friendly Fire is also pretty funny.
Oh. Yeah. Man, oh man.
Yeah, he's tough. He's a real tough. Like, I am just scrolling up and down the list.
Where's the part of the list that's like, what do we even do with him?
I mean,
like, D-Man is similarly a joke, but has transcended being a joke.
Yeah, but here's the weird thing. D-Man is Six-Pack in reverse. Six-Pack's created as a joke and then kind of sticks around long enough to, like, fucking fight Lobo.
And then, go to the afterlife.
And go to the afterlife and have that, like he's one of the two characters in Hitman who gets a happy ending. One of the things, when Garth Ennis starts tying up the loose ends, which mostly involves killing the entire cast, up to and including the title character, spoiler warning, Six-Pack gets a happy ending. Six-Pack quits drinking and goes and has a family. And then fucking 15 years later, All-Star Section 8 happens. But, like, D-Man's created relatively sincere, then becomes a joke, then kind of comes back and like, transcends being a joke again, like traverses backwards.
Yeah. I mean, I think D-Man is probably better. D-Man is probably better.
Okay. So that's our starting point.
I have gone down to Nice Pete.
You know what?
Weirdly comparable. Yeah. Nice Pete's got some problems.
Is Showbiz Michael Kazantzakis, Roast Beef's brother?
Shitty brother, yeah.
Is he a better character because when he shows up, you know exactly how you feel about that guy and fuck that guy, but that's exactly what it's supposed to be?
Yeah. Yeah.
He is exactly what he is intended to be.
He is exactly the scumbag you think he is, yes.
Yeah. Does that make him a better character than Six-Pack, who is complicated?
Yeah. Yeah. Because again, Six-Pack has all this stuff baked into him that's just weird and bad. Like, I think I'm scrolling down the list more. Like, is Sixpack better than a character who's kind of dumb? Like, or that we kind of just don't like Man-Bat?
I don't know if Man-Bat's a better character than Sixpack, but I kind of feel like Maxi Zeus is.
I mean, I think Sixpack is maybe better than the Key.
The Key's name is Grant Porter.
Yeah.
Does Sixpack have a real name?
You know what? I have no idea.
I'm trying to find Sixpack in a wiki.
I've only ever seen him as Sixpack. I've never seen him in like his secret identity.
This is the Sixpack disambiguation page. This thing is trying to tell me that there are that there are two different Sixpacks. The DC Wiki is currently trying to tell me that Sid Speck, mm-hmm. Get it?
Sid Speck.
Is a different character on Prime Earth than he was on New Earth.
He's the same guy. How dare you?
God, I forgot how great his shirt is, where it's like the six-pack rings, but there's seven letters and six packs, so the key is just down on this.
Hand wrote a K, yeah.
Above the key.
Above the key. Just above the key.
Yeah.
Between Maxi Zeus and the key at number 343.
Yeah, jeepers.
It's six-pack. Which, he's going to go above at least one or two other members of Section 8.
Yeah.
One member of Section 8 is going to shoot for the bottom of the list. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
And other members of Section 8 are going to go above him. But we will get to them when we get to them. Next on Dan's list is Veronica Lodge, his top shooter.
Veronica's great.
Veronica rules.
Veronica's so good.
Like, at one time in my life, I was like, oh, yes, the Betty Veronica debate. What an ongoing debate that's tough. But I reached a point in my life where I just became like 100% a Veronica partisan.
That is the least surprising thing I have ever learned about you, Matt. She's great, is the thing. Like, she's... It's hard to explain. Because you can only really triangulate her in terms of other characters, right?
I think there's something fair in that, yes.
Because she's on the Scrooge McDuck and Richie Rich axis, right? Of yes. Wealthy characters who look like there's this spectrum. And what it is, it's wealthy characters, and they are on the spectrum from inherited and completely undeserving because they're garbage people, which is Richie Rich.
Right.
If you want a bottom shooter, if you want to set a new bottom of the list, Richie fucking Rich, by the way. And then at the other end of the spectrum is grew up poor and deserves all the money that they have earned. That's Uncle Scrooge. And so like in the middle, like you have characters like, you know, towards Scrooge, you would have like Batman, who inherited his money but is putting it towards good purposes. And then like towards the dead center, you probably have like Lex Luthor, who grew up poor but is using his money purely for evil.
Right.
Veronica's on that axis. She's also on the weird like Archie to Reggie axis. And she's also kind of on the weird little like like Becky Burdock Squirrel Girl axis. You have to triangulate Veronica.
Well, here's something about where she is on that first axis you talked about, the Scrooge Richie Rich axis.
Mm-hmm.
You expect her to be in one place of that axis. You expect Veronica to be closer to the Richie Rich end because she did inherit her money. She has rich parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because she does have a mean girl exterior. But brother, there are layers to Veronica Lodge.
Ronnie's got layers.
And she ends up being much closer to the Scrooge end despite inheriting that money, which is part of why Veronica rules so much.
Yes.
And I feel like that holds true in not just like comics Veronica, like that has come through into like Riverdale Veronica.
Riverdale Veronica is amazing.
Yeah.
Kimmy Mendez, amazing.
So good.
For, I mean, like, most Riverdale characters are amazing. I mean, Matt, are you caught up on season two of Riverdale?
No. No, I'm not.
Brother, there's some Cheryl stuff towards the end of that season you're gonna love.
Okay. Good to know.
But yeah, like, she's so good on Riverdale. Like, new Veronica is also good, but I think we're ranking specifically, like, classic Veronica.
I think we probably have to make a distinction between... Well, I don't know. We ranked Archie... We just ranked Archie.
Yeah.
We just ranked Jughead.
That's true. There's not... I mean, I guess the shift into the new Archie stuff is not, like, a dramatic... Because that's the thing that we kind of like about it, right? Is that the characters are all kind of who they're supposed to be.
Characters are pretty consistent, yeah.
Yeah. So, she's not as good as Jughead. Is Veronica okay. better than Archie?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Then this is going to be tough, because right above Archie we have Snake Eyes, whose real name is Classified.
I mean, I think she could probably go just above Archie. Because she's not going to beat Sabrina. She's not going to beat Norrin Rad, who pines for Shaw the Ball.
It's in his name.
She's not going to beat Frank Castle, and she's not going to beat Snake Eyes, whose real name is Classified.
Yeah. So
that Arashikage Ninja.
Yeah, the Silent Master. R.I.P. Matt, I did find out this week, by the way, Dr. Venom is unaware of Snake Eyes' demise.
Oh, Dr. Venom, you gotta get on top of shit, man.
Yeah. Well, he's been dead for a while. Also, he now has a robot body. Just that's a quick Dr. Venom update for you.
Extremely cool.
Just dip into G.I. Joe number 256 this week if you want to find out more. Veronica Ronnie Lodge enters the list at number 56.
Great showing for Veronica. Not tip-top of the list, but certainly a top shooter.
Yeah, good stuff.
Dan's bottom shooter for us.
Okay.
Get ready. Is Gunfire.
Okay, now here's the thing. Gunfire's not that bad.
Gunfire is just... Is cheesy a fair term?
Gunfire's stupid. Gunfire's a dumb idea. But you know what? Comics are fucking full of dumb ideas.
Certainly. I mean, undoubtedly, yes.
And you know what? There is functionally zero difference between Gunfire's power and Gambit's power. And if you think there is, you are lying to yourself. It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
I think the main thing about Gunfire...
is that his costume sucks and his name is stupid, and also he's stupid and his comic's bad.
I was mainly going to talk about his costume being very bland, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like the armor you would wear to a laser tag arena.
That's very astute. Matt, you are not incorrect.
Like, Gunfire is basically laser tag the character.
Yeah, kinda. We should say, by the way, we're talking about Andrew Van Horn.
Yeah, that's him. He's in the Blood Pack.
Yes, he was. He's a Bloodlines character. Like Hitman, which is so funny that Garth Ennis will fucking rag on Gunfire in that Hitman 1 million special when Tommy Monahan is like of equal awful origin, where he's like, yeah, I was a hitman, but aliens came down and gave me X-ray vision. Like, on paper, it's just as dumb. Yeah. Obviously, in execution, quite different. Did you know Gunfire's father is named Gunther?
Gunther Van Horn?
Gunther Van Horn. I wish Gunfire's name was Gunther Fire. That's my new pitch.
Gunther Fieri.
So yeah, Gunfire has the ability to basically agitate the atoms in anything he can touch to cause it to explode and shoot, So
he makes everything a gun.
He can make everything a gun. Hilariously, the picture of him on the DC wiki that I just looked up to find out his real name is him using his powers on a gun.
Hilarious.
Very funny.
On the cover of Gunfire number one, he is turning a mallet into a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like a wooden mallet.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, the 90s were wild.
I mean, look. Yeah, Gunfire's not like bottom of the list. He's just stupid.
Yeah, Gunfire just dumb.
Like, we got lots of characters on here who are just stupid.
Yeah.
Like, Snowflame's stupid.
Gunfire, very similar to Snowflame.
Yeah. Like, one of those DC characters who is stupid, but if you bring him up, you're kind of like, oh, shit.
Here's the thing about Gunfire. Gunfire first, like, everybody appears in an annual in Bloodlines, right? So, like, Hitman's in Demon, Argus is in Flash. Gunfire appears in Deathstroke the Terminator annual number 2. Is Gunfire any dumber than Deathstroke in concept? No.
In concept, no.
No, absolutely not.
In execution, 100%.
In execution, significantly. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Is Gunfire worse than Sixpack?
Yeah. Because, I mean, Sixpack's been in good comics.
Is he worse than Polka Dot Man?
Is he better than Vibe, who is quite problematic?
Well, see, that's what Polka Dot Man is. Between Polka Dot Man and Vibe is the spot, I think, where we go from dumb to bad.
Yeah, Vibe pretty bad.
Like, Nomad is bad, Hush is bad, Mr. Zazz is bad. Like, that is where the list turns to bad.
Man, what mood were we in when we put Mr. Zazz that far down?
Mr. Zazz sucks.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, Gunfire. Andrew Van Horn is number 348 out of 385.
Chris, our next list comes from Brendan Casey.
Okay.
And I feel like we could get through these fairly quickly. They're either going to be quick or take the rest of the show.
Okay.
This list is Gotham's Finest.
Alrighty.
It starts with Harvey Bullock.
Pretty good.
Bullock is exactly what he needs to be. Yeah. Like, we were talking about Nice Pete, or we were talking about, I'm sorry, not Nice Pete, we were talking about Showbiz being exactly what he needs to be for the story. Similarly, Bullock is exactly what he needs to be for the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whenever he appears, which is usually the fly in the ointment.
The monkey in the wrench.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis would have been such a good Harvey Bullock.
He would have had to put on some weight, but sure.
Yeah, he could
have. The weirdest thing in the world to me is that the cop who is basically Bullock in Batman 89 is not Bullock.
Yeah.
Detective Eckhart.
Yeah.
Eckhart, think about the future.
So weird. Just like the cop who is almost Rene Montoya in Batman Begins.
Dark Knight
is not.
Yeah.
Because she ends up having to, like, Eckhart has to get shot and the other cop has to be dirty.
She has to be forced into being dirty.
Yes. Yeah. Bullock's great, and Bullock was one of those characters that kind of got a big boost from BTS. Because if you remember, like, the original conception of Bullock was that he was like this almost a Columbo, kind of like slob detective. And then when he went home, it's like he had his, you know, very neat apartment and he loves old movies. And then that kind of goes out the window when Batman the Animated Series comes around and they're just like, hey, what if we made him an asshole? What if he's just an asshole?
Yeah, he is an asshole, but I think the more important thing is that he is a foil for Batman on the police department who's not a dirty cop.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just a cop that thinks that the cops can do what they need to do without Batman.
Yes, which he is objectively wrong about.
But it is an important character to have.
Yeah, I agree. I like Harvey Bullock. Obviously, he's not going to go up in, like, the Jim Gordon neighborhood, which is, like, number 34 or something.
No, I don't think he probably cracks the top 100.
Is he better than Garfield, the cat?
I'm going to say it. weirdly comparable.
Yeah, kind of, right?
I think he's actually more comparable, though, weirdly, to Dum Dum Dugan.
Yeah, that's where my eyes drifted to as well. I don't think he's as good as Crypto. I think that's a hard ceiling.
I have similar, like, I appreciate them when they're in the story and they add to the story feelings as Harvey Bullock and Dum Dum Dugan. They should occupy the same space on this list.
I like Bullock more than I like Dugan.
Bullock's more complicated than Dugan, for sure.
Yeah, I prefer Gotham Central to Godzilla.
Okay, then let's put Harvey Bullock between Crypto the Superdog and Dum Dum Dugan.
Alrighty, there he goes at number 184 on the list. That's page 5 of 10, so pretty close to the midpoint there.
But it's a top-heavy list, just like all our other lists. Next up is somebody who rules, Rene Montoya.
Yeah, I was going to say scroll up. Like, I was literally looking at Jim Gordon at number 34, and I was like, nobody's going to go higher than Jim Gordon. And then I was like, Rene Montoya, though.
Rene Montoya was great. Then she became the question. Or even, like, just before she became the question, she got to, like, tip-top awesome rule status.
Yeah, Rene Montoya rules in three different sections in three different for three different reasons, right? Like, Rene Montoya rules when she's, you know, Bullock's partner, you know, kind of 90, like, because again, she's created for the show.
Yeah, she was on BTAS first.
Yeah, which, no, like, she should be in the conversation as much as Hartley is on that front. Then she's just kind of like the cop in Gotham City, right? Like, she's in Nightfall. And she's like a good character there.
Yeah.
Then in like No Man's Land, that's when it really picks up.
And she's a lead character in Gotham Central.
Yeah. Unrelated or not coincidental. That's the first time she's in a Greg Rucka story.
Yeah.
And all the Two-Face stuff that runs throughout Rucka's run on the Detective Comics, she's really good in. Then she's super good in Gotham Central when she's very much in the spotlight and we get half a life. And then she fucking rules as the question.
Yeah, she's great. She's
as
enjoyable as the question as Vic Sage is. And all the stuff leading up to her becoming the question where, you know, Vic Sage is dying and she's seeing him through. Awesome. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
Montoya rules.
She's really good. She is extremely good and extremely underused character.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know
these days
why there is not a question ongoing with Rene Montoya.
Well, because Vic Sage is back. Vic Sage came back with New 52.
Why though?
I don't know.
Also, wasn't the question like Judas or something?
He was one of the
fucking Trinity of Sin.
He was the Trinity in the Trinity of Sin with the Phantom Stranger and what's her name?
Pandora?
Pandora.
Ugh.
Yep.
Why?
Beats me. Explain it. Okay, does she go above Gordon?
Dude, I really love Jim Gordon.
I do too. But Montoya rules.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Montoya rules. Montoya's very, very good. Have you read that part in Batman Year One where Jim Gordon shows up at Flass's with the baseball bat?
I have.
Where he runs him off the road? And he says it's been 15 years since he had to take down a Green Beret?
Okay. Gordon probably edges her out. Waller probably edges her out. She-Hulk and Captain Marvel are similarly good. Black Panther has a longer, better history. I think she definitely goes above Black Canary.
I think she goes above Granny Goodness for sure.
Okay.
I would be happy to put her above Jen Walters.
All right, do it.
Yeah, I think that's so Rene Montoya, aka the question, who should be the question right now, enters the list at number 36.
Next on Brendan's list is Crispus Allen, who we could say briefly was the Spectre.
I was going to say, you talking about the Spectre?
Yeah.
You talking about the Spectre 2? Spectre 3. Spectre
3, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Hal Jordan Spectre was
Roman
the Spectre.
Number 3. Oh, man, I forgot about Day of Judgment.
Yeah. You forgot about that Hal Jordan Spectre for a little bit.
What was the Day of Judgment? Is Day of Judgment when Hal Jordan becomes the Spectre, or is Day of Judgment when Chris Allen becomes the Spectre?
I do not know.
I don't care.
I don't think it was called Day of Judgment when Crispus Allen became the Spectre.
Okay, Day of Judgment might be when Hal Jordan became the Spectre, which is the most wild choice they could have made with that character.
It's a wild choice that Crispus Allen becomes the Spectre also.
Yeah, that's the second most wild choice that has ever been made about the Spectre.
Because he is a down-to-earth, on-the-beat detective throughout Gotham Central.
Okay, I'm not going to say this is where Gotham Central gets bad, because the truth is Gotham Central doesn't get bad.
No.
Gotham Central, top-notch all the way through.
It does take a turn.
Gotham Central gets weird when Jim Corrigan shows up, and it's not the Jim Corrigan who's the Spectre, it's just another unrelated dude who's named Jim Corrigan.
Who's a dirty cop. Yeah.
But it's not the Spectre.
No.
And then Chris Allen becomes the Spectre.
Yeah.
That shit's weird. And I don't know if that was like editorially mandated or what, but brother, it is weird. Like that's where like Gotham Central, that's like when you have to raise your eyebrow and then you keep going because it's really good. But
yeah, it's not going to stop you. But it is weird that, first of all, Crispus Allen dies, and then that he becomes the Spectre.
Yeah. And then that nothing's ever done with him as the Spectre.
Almost nothing at all.
Yeah.
They started a Spectre series, a Tales of the Unexpected series.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That lasted almost no time. And then nothing happened with him as the Spectre at all, except he shows up in Final Crisis. Like, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, bad. But, I mean, before that, Allen's really good.
Yeah, he's great.
But Allen is, weirdly, lots of unfulfilled potential. Because, like, his whole deal when he first shows up in Detective Comics to be Renee's new partner is that he's a cop from Metropolis.
Right.
And everything that he does as I used to work in Metropolis is done better with Maggie Sawyer, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so, like, you get the really – he's too similar to Montoya in that he's a very – you know, they're both good by-the-book cops, you know?
There's not a lot of conflict between them.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, like, those stories are still good, and, like, there doesn't have to be conflict between them when they're hunting down fucking Black Spider or whatever.
Yeah.
But – It's weird that like it seems like there's so much there that never gets tapped into. But I think of the non-Montoya Gotham Central characters, other than like maybe Stacy, I think he's the best in Gotham Central. Like he's better than Romy. I think Josie Mack is another character that I think Gotham Central does really well with, but she's probably not as good as Chris Allen.
I think he's probably going to go somewhere around the middle of the list.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, is he somewhere – is he like in Aunt May territory?
I don't think he's as good as Aunt May because – Aunt May never, like, really became Golden Oldie.
Yeah. Is he better than Hulkling or Todd? The Squirrel?
Todd the Squirrel? that's actually really tough. That's tough. Man, this is a tough one. I don't think he's as good as Batarok.
Okay.
So I don't think he's as good as, like, Megatron. Probably. Is he? He's better than Grifter.
Yeah.
But, well, that's Blade in the comics only.
Right. How about between Matter Eater Lad and Grifter?
Yeah, I think that's where he's got to go.
Okay.
So Chris Allen of the GCPD goes into list number 245.
A.K.A. Spectre 3.
You're right, Matt. That's on me for not putting that in there. Spectre 3 is on the list.
Next on Brendan's list is Sarah Essen Gordon.
R.I.P. in peace.
That's right, R.I.P. in peace.
Sarah Essen Gordon. Sarah Gordon's my sister's name. Sarah Essen Gordon is, of course, the Essen who appears in Batman Year One.
That's right.
And then comes back and becomes Jim Gordon's
second wife.
Yes. And is a really, like, they have a really interesting and good relationship, and then she is shot in the head by the Joker.
Yep.
And the thing is, her death is actually really good. Like, removed from the context of women being murdered in comic books by supervillains so that men can be sad. She gets a really good death of, like, having to go up against the Joker alone to literally save a room full of babies. That's how No Man's Land ends. And the way it's all built to is actually really good, because Gordon's there on, like, day one. Like, Gordon stays in Gotham City when Batman leaves, right? So it is very much a Jim Gordon-heavy story. But then the Joker is not there for, like, 10 months. Like, there's this story where all the villains in Gotham City are kind of, like, doing Mad Max stuff, and the Joker's not there, and the Joker's not there, and then he's there. And the build-up to that is really, really good. And Sarah Essen Gordon becomes the casualty of that. It's a really good story, but it is also the only kind of defining moment I can think of for her as a character, unfortunately.
She had a handful of moments before that. Between Year One and No Man's Land. She did spend a lot of time just, like, gone. Because at the end of Year One, she goes to New York. She leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's, like, Gordon starts to kind of have an affair with her and confesses to his first wife about that. And then she leaves for New York.
Yeah.
And she comes back, becomes a love interest for Gordon, briefly becomes commissioner after Gordon gets demoted, but then gets fired. So after that, she's, you know, Gordon's wife. She's not even in the GCPD anymore. She becomes, like, she works for, like, City Hall. She works for the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a character, but she's just as often a plot point, you know?
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I think she's interesting, but, man, is there anything that is more complicated than, like, post-crisis Jim Gordon, whose daughter is his niece, who might be his daughter?
Yeah, it's weird. Also, in post-New 52 continuity, she and Gordon were never married.
Yeah, because Barbara Gordon is Jim Gordon's daughter.
Yeah.
Like she should be.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Frank Miller had never heard of Batgirl when he did Year One. He's like, Barbara Gordon? Like, Jim Gordon's wife? Because he gives, like, because Batgirl still exists. At the time of Year One.
Yeah.
Like, Barbara Gordon is still a character in the DC Universe. And then Jim Gordon's wife is Barbara. Also, she's pregnant with his son, Jim Jr. It doesn't make sense. Anyway,
But speaking of Sarah being, like, an object or a plot point, she is mentioned numerous times in Dark Knight Returns and never seen.
Yeah.
There's that whole thing where Gordon's like, I think of Sarah, the rest is easy.
Yeah. So where are we going to put her? I don't dislike her.
I'm afraid she's going to, like, she's like Gwen Stacy-ish.
But I feel like Gwen is more of a character.
Gwen is more of a character.
Yeah. I think she's... I think she's, like, more comparable to, like, Outlaw. Nigel Higgins.
Okay.
Who I was talking to Benito the other day, and he said he wished his name was Nigel Punisher, the British Punisher.
I mean, that would be great.
I think she's more comparable to him, because, like, he's made very few appearances, and I fucking love him.
Well, then, let's put her just above Outlaw.
But is she better than Stegron the Dinosaur Man? Is she better than Tombstone?
She's probably not better than Tombstone, if we're being honest.
Yeah, probably not better than Scott Lang.
Yeah,
Lightray, Vulcan, Namor, that's about where it's...
Livewire's got more going on.
Yeah, but this is only comics Livewire. Remember.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Livewire is another animated series original.
Yeah, okay. Well, where do you want to put her in that mix?
I think between Lightray and Vulcan.
Okay.
That's Gabriel Summers, the third Summers brother.
All right, Sarah Essen Gordon.
Sarah Essen Gordon should have been Spectre 3. That shit would have ruled.
That would have been good. Finally, here on Brendan's list is Margaret Maggie Sawyer, who is great.
Maggie Sawyer rules. So that's settled. Good job. The only problem with Maggie Sawyer is that the Batwoman stuff got weirdly derailed.
But that's just a story that didn't happen.
Yeah, but I guess it would have been so much better had it. Had it happened, you know?
Yeah. But we were talking about Crispus Allen earlier being a cop that comes in from Metropolis and gets thrown into the Gotham thing. And you made the point that got done better with Maggie Sawyer.
Yes.
And the reason that's done better with Maggie Sawyer is because we actually see her in Metropolis before she comes to Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had that whole run where... she was a cop in the Superman book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's got she's a big presence in those books.
Yeah. She in the John Byrne Superman, she's there. Like, she's an important police character.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets transferred to Gotham in the middle of no man's land.
Yep.
Which is a hell of a time to get transferred to Gotham.
Also, I think one of the first, canonically lesbian characters in DC Comics, who also, you see her her partner on the animated series, and they, it's subtle, but, when Maggie's in the hospital, that's who's waiting for her and who, smiles and takes her hand when she's in the hospital on the cartoon.
Yeah,
which I was always impressed by.
She's out. In the Superman books.
Yeah, in the 90s. In the mid to late 90s, yeah. Is she out in the 80s?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, good for her. And good for DC on that one.
Yeah. And then obviously it became more and more a part of a character as things progressed.
Yeah.
But it's been a pretty consistent part of her character from pretty early on.
Yeah. And then, of course, once, Batwoman rolls around, then we get a lot of really good Maggie stuff in that book. No, Maggie Sawyer's great. Again, a criminally underused character.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, she's back in Metropolis now, right?
I don't know. I don't recall.
She was in some of those early Action Comics, those Dan Jurgens Action Comics.
Dan Jurgens Action Comics just slide right off the brain. She's also in charge of the Major Crimes Unit in Soft Targets, which is the best Joker story.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that shit rules.
Yeah, man.
So probably not as good as Renee.
No, not as good as Renee.
Not as good as Renee.
Probably as good as Bullock or not as good as Bullock?
I like her better than Bullock, honestly.
I feel like she serves a similar role to Bullock. Not that they do the same things in stories, but that when they show up, you know what their role is going to be more often than not.
The thing about Maggie Sawyer is she very rarely has had a starring role. She's like the definition of an ensemble player.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I think she's very good at that.
Bullock is currently at number 185.
Yeah.
I would be willing to put her a few spots above that. Like, she's probably above Sharon Carter. She's probably above Cheryl Blossom and Husk. Above Ultimate Peter Parker. And the Will from Saga. Once we start getting to the top of this page, where we have Night Thrasher, Ultron, Omega Red, Shredder, and Thanos, that's where I'm stopping.
Are you talking about Urukusaki?
Yes, Urukusaki.
For Shredder?
That's right.
I will be honest with you. I am more excited to see Omega Red show up when Omega Red shows up.
Okay. Should she go above Ultron?
There have been fewer bad Maggie Sawyer stories than there are bad Ultron stories, but I don't know if there's fewer in percentage.
The batting average of Ultron stories is low.
Yeah.
There's a handful of really good Ultron stories.
Yeah.
I would be more than fine putting Maggie Sawyer between Omega Red and Ultron.
All right. Then I think that's where she goes. Number 175 on the list, Maggie Sawyer. Of the Metropolis Special Crimes Unit and the Gotham City Major Crimes Unit.
And as much as I hate to do this, we have to stop now.
Aw.
We're out of time. We did two lists.
Like you said, Matt, we were either going to blow through it or it would be the rest of the show.
Well, it was the rest of the show. We've got quite a few other Line Stepper panel president lists to get through. But if you would like to send one to us and hope that we can do it in a more timely fashion than we did these, you can send one our way at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send every story ever lists to that email address if you could send listener questions there, or if you want to drop us a line about sponsoring the show or something else, get in touch via email at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send listener questions to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. And check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. It is also where you can see the panel president and every story lists in Google document form. Leave us a review on the podcasting app of your choice. The more positive reviews we get on those, the more we are featured on those places, which means more listeners and the more we can do for you. So help us out that way if you can. Now we've reached a part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net to find links to all my stuff, my other podcasts, my books, my comics, and all my social medias. Speaking of my comics, the final issue of Everything Will Be Okay, number 5, will be out on Comixology this very Wednesday, September 19th. Yes, it is the end of the story. It is going somewhere you did not expect if you've read 1 through 4, so go pick that up if you are so inclined. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
Head on over to the-isb.com. Everything's there.
One more to 420.
That's right. Matt, how'd we do this week, by the way?
Let me see. I'm, Chris, numbers doth appear before me, in smoke before my eyes.
Okay, that's worrisome.
It's 5 digits.
Oh, okay.
I can't read them all. I have to read them all one at a time. 6.
Okay.
9.
Okay.
Those two are separate. So 69.
Okay, nice.
4.
Uh-huh.
2.
Uh-huh.
0.
Uh-huh.
So it's 69-420.
Okay, let me
run. You think that's some kind of sign?
Hang on, I got my Enigma machine here.
Okay.
Let me run it through. You said it was 69?
69.
Okay.
420.
420. Okay, let me pull the crank here. Chunk. It's the Enigma machine. It's going pretty hard trying to.
Wow, it's really buzzing over there.
Okay, I got it. Give me a printout here. What's this? HQC.
Oh, good. And 420 is happening next week. Everybody, we'll talk to you then.
We'll be back for War Rocket Ajax number 420. Is that a special number?
It will be.
It will be. Everybody, have a great week.
We love you.
Blaze it.
Yeah! Stay on. At every